This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Joining us in the studio today is Dr. Matt Olger from the Institute of Astronomy at the University of Cambridge. Hi, Matt.
Yeah.
So you're giving a talk later about dark matter in galaxies. So first of all, what is dark matter?
That's a good question. We don't really know. Basically, it's more of an idea. We understand that galaxies, clusters, the universe itself has to have more mass than the mass that we actually see. It has to have more mass than the mass that we see in stars. It has to have more mass than the mass that we see in gas and other things. So we have a model for what that extra mass is, and that model is dark matter. Particle physicists have ideas about what this might be also. So they think about dark matter as being some exotic new particle that they might want to find. But from an astronomical perspective, most of what it is really just some additional mass component that we know that we need and otherwise don't really have any clue what it is.
What about dark matter in particular is it that you're looking at?
We know quite a bit about dark matter on very, very large scales, on scales of many tens or hundreds of megaparsecs. And most of what we know actually comes from observations of the cosmic microwave background or observations of how galaxies aggregate and cluster on very large scales. But what I'm interested in is basically the fundamental question of what this crazy dark matter stuff actually looks like on much smaller scales inside of galaxies, in the centers of galaxies where we actually see starlight. It's ironic that we know a lot more about dark matter on scales where there isn't really any light than we do on scales where there is light. And so what I'm interested in doing is investigating the properties of this dark matter within our galaxies because it makes up most of the mass of the galaxy itself. So if we want a genuine, interesting description of what galaxies and clusters actually look like, it turns out that describing the light is just the tip of the iceberg, and we actually need to describe the dark matter itself in order to really understand these objects. And so that's what I aim to do.
So you're trying to probe the dark matter in the center of galaxies. How do you plan to do that?
In my research, I probe dark matter in using a combination of things. Basically, the only way to observe dark matter is through its gravitational effects. And the way that we observe gravitational effects is either via its dynamical effect on stars. So if you have a lot of mass, then stars move much more rapidly as a result of the amount of mass that's there. So stellar dynamics is one way to investigate how much mass is there, and by inference, how much dark matter is there. Alternatively, and this is really the big part of my research program, I use what's called strong gravitational lensing, which is very akin to lensing in a laboratory or like the glasses on your face right now, where, you know, you're seeing me because I'm emitting light, or actually light's being reflected off of me and being refracted by your lenses, and it corrects the blurriness that I would otherwise be. For the gravitational lens, if you have a background source, let's say the universe is full of objects very, very far away, those objects are emitting light. The light passes by the massive galaxy or cluster that I'm interested in. And as it's passing by, it feels the gravitational potential, the gravitational field of that galaxy or cluster. And it leads to a lensing effect, just like the light going through your glasses. It causes the light to bend, to be altered in the directions that it would have gone otherwise. And the amount that the light gets bent is related to the amount of mass that's there. And this is how this gravitational lensing effect tells me about mass. There's more mass, the light gets bent to a larger degree than if there's less mass, for example.
So you can observe the structure of the mass in the center of a galaxy by looking at the curvature of this light as it goes around this galaxy cluster or galaxy.
Effectively, that's exactly right. We watch as the photons get deflected by the massive potential.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to take the glasses off your face and sort of tilt them at an angle at the light, you would see multiple images of this light behind my head. And our massive structure is doing the exact same thing as the glasses in your lenses. But if we were really clever, we could figure out what your prescription was by doing that experiment. And so effectively, I guess what I'm doing is figuring out what the prescription of these galaxies is, figuring out how the mass is actually distributed in these galaxies in order to cause the signals we see.
So you use the gravitational lensing to find out the distribution of mass in the galaxy.
That's exactly right.
And then obviously you need to then try and observe the stars and try and see what mass is attributed to mass matter that we know.
That's right.
And so then what do you actually aim to try and do given that difference, the extra mass? What are you ultimately trying to find out?
So there's a couple of interesting things happening here. First is we observe the light in starlight, but we don't directly infer its mass. And what we try to do is we try to say, well, I observe stars in the Milky Way, and in the Milky Way I actually can determine the mass of those stars. So then when I observe starlight in a distant galaxy that's, let's say, a couple of gigaparsecs away, for those of you at home, giga light years, and I can try to relate the light that I see to the actual mass in the stars, much as I would say that, you know, I see the amount of light that's coming from the sun, I know the mass of the sun, it gives me something called a mass-to-light ratio. So I can try to postulate or impose a mass-to-light ratio on the stars. But
assuming they're like the galaxy.
Assuming they're like the Milky Way. And this is related, how I turn stellar light into stellar mass is via something called the initial mass function or the IMF. It's basically a recipe for going from light to mass. So one thing that we could do in principle is once we have a total mass measurement from gravitational lensing, we can just subtract off the mass due to stars using some mass to light ratio like the Milky Way's, and what we're left with is dark matter. And because we know how the stars are distributed, we can see them, we can infer also then, subtracting off that distribution, we can infer subsequently the distribution of dark matter. Now, one thing that we found is that the stellar mass to light ratio turns out to be a non-trivial thing. And indeed, the stellar mass to light ratio of the galaxies I look at is probably not consistent with the stellar mass to light ratio of the Milky Way.
So you're saying that if you were to look at a piece of light, which you said would be like the sun, that would actually attribute to more mass than you'd get from the galaxy in these other galaxies that you're looking at.
That's right. And the reason for this is via either one of two methods. So the light that we actually see, we are attributing to stellar mass correctly. The problem is that there's a lot of stellar mass in both the Milky Way and these other galaxies that we don't see. For example, you have massive stars which subsequently evolve and go supernovae. And after they've gone supernovae, they leave behind what we call a stellar remnant, a neutron star or a black hole. And those things have mass, but no light. And so what we're trying to do is infer how much mass is left over without being able to see their light. And in the Milky Way, you do that by basically saying, well, I see these many supernova remnants per star like the sun. And so there's a relationship that you can write down between those two. It's not clear that that relationship holds in external galaxies. Alternatively, there's very low mass stars, what we would call M dwarf stars. So stars maybe a half or a quarter the mass of the sun. And those stars we also don't see effectively because most of the light that we see is coming from stars very close to the same amount of luminosity as the sun itself. So there could be lots and lots of these low mass stars in a galaxy contributing significantly to the mass, but not to the light. Now, we've tried to count these stars in the Milky Way and, again, follow the same recipe that, for given the number of stars like our sun, we infer some number of stars much lower mass than our sun. And so we can try to apply that recipe to these external galaxies also. And what we found is that these recipes are not consistent with external galaxies, that external galaxies, at least very massive external galaxies, appear to be genuinely different than the Milky Way.
So you're saying that the processes in these external galaxies that go to form the stars form more either high mass stars that go to the black holes or the more low mass stars which you don't see because they're too dim.
That's right.
So you're saying that the fundamental ways that stars form in these galaxies are different.
That's right.
And so what does that tell you then about galaxy evolution? Because surely this is, I assume this is where this is going. Seeing a difference in particular types of galaxies, surely then you're looking for a difference between those galaxies and our galaxy.
So this tells us about the physical conditions, presumably tells us about the physical conditions when stars were formed in these galaxies. But we know that these galaxies are different from the Milky Way anyways. These galaxies are much more massive than the Milky Way. The galaxies I study tend to be spheroidal old systems, whereas the Milky Way has a lot of young stars and has a significant disk. Our inference is because these objects are very massive and very old, we also think that they're stars formed first or earlier in the universe. And so the conditions for star formation of these first galaxies could very well have been different than the conditions for star formation in the Milky Way. I mean, the Milky Way is still forming stars in a universe that is different than the universe was, let's say, 10 or 12 billion years ago. But at the end of the day, all of this business about stellar mass to light ratios and weighing the stars is really noise to the signal that I really want to investigate.
Okay. Which is the dark matter.
Which is the dark matter, that's right.
So what do you aim to do once you've got rid of that noise? What do you aim to do with the distribution? Or are you just working on the constraining that noise?
No. The picture about the noise, so to speak, it's other people's science. So my noise is other people's signal. But I think that that's starting to come into focus in part because of experiments by other groups who do completely different things. And so I think we're starting to learn maybe how these the stellar mass to light ratio is working out. But I guess what I'm interested in is again comparing the dark matter structure in galaxies to what maybe theory about structure formation says. So the prevailing cosmology right now is something called lambda CDM, which says that the universe is 3/4 dark energy, which is in this case lambda or the cosmological constant, and 1/4 dark matter. And in the lambda CDM paradigm, when you form structures, when you form galaxies and clusters of galaxies, there's a universal profile that comes out of this, something called the Navarro-Frankenwhite profile, but that's not particularly important.
So this is a profile for the dark matter distribution.
That's right. So for the density distribution of the dark matter. Mm-hmm. And you end up with something, what we call a universal profile, in the sense that galaxies look like small versions of clusters. And the reason for this is that approximately gravity has no scales in it. So there's no characteristic mass scale of gravity. There's no characteristic spatial or distance scale in gravity. So if I try to figure out how lambda CDM works, I can just set up a computer program where I have a bunch of dark matter particles and I allow it to form structures. And I see that my computer program formed a cluster, and inside of the cluster are a bunch of massive galaxies. And around those massive galaxies are smaller galaxies. But then I can take the exact same computer program. I don't even have to rerun it. I just say, oh, initially I called the mass of my dark matter particle one number. Now I'm going to cut that number by a factor of 100. And initially I called my distance scale one number. I'm going to cut that number by a different factor. So I have the exact same distribution of particles as before. I didn't have to rerun it. But now what I used to call a big massive cluster, because I've changed the units, becomes a galaxy. Clearly those things have the same distribution of particles. I didn't have to rerun the simulation. So this is the universal profile, that galaxies and clusters have the same profile. Now, does that actually happen in real astronomical objects? I think we have interesting ideas about why it might not happen. So by actually quantifying what the dark matter looks like, we can investigate the physics that might cause real structure to deviate from this universal profile.
So you're trying to find effectively deviations from this lambda CDM profile that you talked about.
That's right.
Which is pretty hard physics at the moment. That's probably the biggest question, really, I would say.
Well, that's because you're an insightful young man.
Thank you very much for joining us on the Jogcast today and telling us about your research.
No problem.